December 24th, 2019 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR, and it's 2 UTC. My name is Dave, KV0S, and finally got all my grades in, so starting to have a little more time, although my wife has kept me busy with holiday duties, so maybe in a day or two I'll start having more time to explore some other things. So that's it for me. Next on the list we have G. Perry, and he's KD2SAK. Go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. I'm just checking in. Same boat, handed in all my grades, but I've been busy with some family activities for the holidays, so nothing to report. I'll just leave it at that and let everybody get back to it.
Next on our list is Mike, AA8K. He's recording, and we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Do you want to say something, Mike?
Sure. Greetings to everyone, and I'm really excited about the project.
Fine business. And next on the list is Nathan, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathan.
Hi, everyone. I also got my grades in this past week, so that's about wrapped up. And I have been working on some more of the details for the HAMSI workshop. I have the workshop webpage up now. I still have to get the registration open, which I think we'll do that shortly after New Year's, but I'll send the link out to the webpage. And we're getting ready for Christmas as well. So W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business. And next on the list is Tom, N5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave, and good evening to everybody on the list. Quiet week for the project, not too much. Spent most of the week struggling with the software update on a server and watching all the virtual machines disappear. So I think that's now under control. Back to the group.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI. Are you there, Scotty? Well, Scotty's must have some microphone issues, so we'll go on. Next is Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
User disconnected from your channel.
Well, that brings us through the list. We have two that haven't had a chance to check in, but we're at the end. Bill, are you available now?
Yeah, I got it working finally. I had to log out of the server and log back in. I'm driving now, so I'm going to have to make my comments brief.
Go ahead.
Oh, is it my turn?
Your turn if you want it.
Disconnected from your channel.
Are you still copying me?
Yeah, it was Scotty that dropped out.
Is Scotty coming back? Because I got a couple of things that he needs to hear.
Yes, I believe he's coming back. He's been here about 10 minutes, but his mic isn't working.
Okay, I'll hold on to my comments until Scotty is back, because I want to talk to him about the discovery process and about the issue of the security that he raised last week, because I have some ideas about that. I did some research this week, and I managed to get both of the protocols of the OpenHP SDR running on the Odroid N2, and I know it's working because I can successfully connect to the Red Pataya. And I also have the simulator working along with that same protocol, but I want to talk about how we're going to proceed with the Tangerine itself.
Okay, well, we'll hang on. I assume Scotty will be back in a little bit. And anybody else, you're welcome to start a discussion.
Yeah, I recall Scotty had some internet problems last week. He was having packet dropouts, and he had to reboot and reset his modem. He may be having similar problems.
I also could probably do a report on Dave Witten's progress. He was telling me if he doesn't show up, I could fill in. Scotty, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. I had computer problems here. I just got to the point where I could hear you guys.
Well, we can hear you now, so go ahead and tell us what you've been up to.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I missed everyone's info there. You finally this week got back onto the data engine design, so I'm trying to see if I can get the schematic completed by the end of the year here, so we can do a review right at the beginning, and then need to talk to Tom about how we want to proceed with the RF module. So I guess other than that, that's what's been going on.
Bill has some comments that he wants to ask you some questions.
Okay, fire away, Bill.
Okay, all right. I took what you said last week to heart regarding some things related to the discovery of the data engine using UDP for everything and issues of security. Just to prove to myself I could do it, I got the open HPSDR, both old protocol and new protocol, working. The old protocol works with the Red Pataya, so I proved to myself I can connect to that. And both the old and the new can be supported in the simulator, the data engine simulator that I have been working with. So the idea that I have is I suggest that we leave a stub in place for the security protocol that your Motorola buddy was talking about, and get some of the communications between the small board computer and the data engine working with the stub in place where we can plug in security. This qualifies as building security in from the start, but not letting it be an impediment to developing the core functionality. So just to throw this idea out there, if you would like to have a version one of the firmware that supports open HPSDR protocol, either old or new, for the discovery, we could make quite a bit of progress with that, with the idea that we will go back and replace the sign-on part later. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea.
I agree, too. Right.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. All right. Also.
Yeah, what I will do is I will continue developing with that, and I'll have... I've started putting everything on GitLab. I've started up a new branch for the security stuff and sign on and all of that. If somebody else would like to have, I don't know if I can make a GitLab room to be, or rather a GitLab repository to be available to just selected people for now. I don't want everybody in the world messing with it until we have something that we can share. I will continue working with that, and I'll give reports on progress. And in the meantime, if you would like to put together a first pass protocol, which with the intention we'll update it later, that would be fine. Go ahead.
Okay, sounds great. And if we do, so basically we're going to have HPSDR as the Rev Zero protocol. And then first pass will be the real native protocol, but without security, but with the stubs in there for it. And then the final will include the security. Did I get that right?
He's in a car, Scotty.
I'm kind of driving through an area where there's a wreck. We've been driving from Huntsville, Alabama, to Orlando all day, and we've encountered so many crashes on the roads. While we haven't been involved in them, fortunately, the traffic's starting to speed up. So what I'm going to do is I will hang back and just listen for the balance of the call. Go ahead.
Okay, well, just cogitate on this a bit. Like what I had suggested was, the way I understand it is that Rev 0 is going to be HPSDR protocol, and then we're going to have our Rev 1 protocol that's going to not include security, and then our official protocol, when it's done, will be Rev 1 with added security. So if that sounds right, then we can discuss that in an email, but it sounds like an excellent idea, or some variant of that. It would be awesome.
Yeah, I think sounds like a good plan, as long as you feel comfortable with making that many changes to the firmware. But my impression is you have enough expertise with doing that. It should be feasible. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I will have no problem doing that. And I'd be interested in the description of your data engine simulator. And that might be an easy way to test out the firmware, the protocol, even on our end, before we implemented an FPGA.
Okay, Scotty, this is Tom. Quick, go back through that real quick. Version 0 is OpenHPSDR. Version 1 was what?
Was our native protocol with without security. And then the final version would be our version with security.
Okay, thank you.
Does that sound, did I get it? What Bill was talking about, correct?
I'm just trying to write.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. And regarding the data engine, what that is it's actually not that different. It's got a lot in common with the main control routine. It's something written in C, and it uses an asynchronous package called UVLIB, Uniform Victor Lima Italy Bravo, and it works pretty well with UDP. It works very well with TCP. UDP, it's a little bit more loosey-goosey because you don't have to worry about whether somebody answers when you transmit a packet, and so you don't have to have a callback routine for transmissions and all of that. But anyway, like I say, if anybody wants to see any of that code, just let me know, and I'll give you access to the Git Lib repository where I have it. I'll continue to develop it, and we'll just go to open source. I'll move it from private to public once we have something that's worthy of letting the world look at. Go ahead.
Okay, Bill, quick question. The UV Lib, what packages or what software is that?
That is a package that you load, you install on your Linux system, and then all of the calls, all the asynchronous calls become available for your C code, and you just link to the library, and you include the H file to get the includes the callable routines and all of the necessary variables, and it's very nice. You set up all these things to listen asynchronously, and then it kind of turns on a loop, and they do everything with threads and semaphores. It's all taken care of. You don't have to do all that yourself. The only thing you have to do is take care of memory management, which turns out to really not be that difficult. So I found out what does and doesn't work, and I've got a running implementation of both main control and a DE simulator that use that package, and it works like a champ.
Okay, very good. I'll have to take a look at that. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to just listen for the rest of the time because I can do this talking and driving at the same time, but it's not really that advisable, so I'll just copy the mail. AB4EJ.
Okay, great. Thanks, Bill. Be safe out there amongst the crazy drivers. It is the day before Christmas.
Scotty, just as a little comment, I have talked to Dave face-to-face this week, Dave Witten, and he has gotten at least 4 revs of his boards. He's populating 1 or 2 of them right now. I have not heard whether he's... he said the magnetometers were working fine, the temperature chip was working fine, but he hasn't gotten the communication line tested out yet.
So he hasn't actually done the 100-foot communications yet?
No, he hasn't, because... that's the part he's been putting off further, but he is getting data that looks within the range of what he's seen reported in the papers.
Oh, good. So has he sent anything off to Heilman yet for confirmation?
That I do not know, but I have seen the boards, and they look nice. They were unpopulated when I saw them, and he was still waiting. He's got like 4 or 5 revs of the thing already.
Yeah, I know he has. He has lots of boards coming and going, so that's good. So, but he has one with the temperature chip on it, right? Did you say that was true?
The one I saw had the footprint for the temperatures thing. He's still worried about soldering those very tiny pins. And I looked at the board, and it would be... It's not impossible, but it would be challenging. I think I would mess up a few chips before I got it done right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of stuff's fun for me and my explorers. So as long as there's no underneath pad that we have to use hot air for, we can get the fine pins done. So if he needs help with that, he can certainly we can certainly give it to him. But that's not exciting. He's got results though.
Yeah, and he bought himself a hot plate, so he thought he'd put the board on the hot plate and raise it about 30 degrees to make the soldering a little easier.
Always a good idea. I know on our first board that we actually had a CM do this. He soldered 0402 resistors on with a too warm of an iron and no preheating on the board, and he ended up cracking about a half a dozen resistors with microscopic cracks that took a, he actually took a binary microscope to look at them to see them. You couldn't see it with an eye loop. It was too fine of a crack, but of course we could detect it in the operation of the circuit, so it was not very good.
Other thing, Scotty, I sent you a message during the week over the weekend. On Friday, I was on the open HPSDR list and talked to Phil and told him about some of the things we're doing and some of the things you were doing. And he had some suggestions. So I wanted you to make sure that you listen to the team speak from open HPSDR for this week. And I sent you the link to that recording.
Yeah, thanks. I got about halfway through and then I got distracted and I haven't been back to listen to the last of it. I mean, it's only like 12 minutes long, I think, or 15 minutes long. So yeah, we'll finish listening to that. And sounds like Phil has a different open source embedded processor that he's excited about. My feeling is kind of at the beginning, I'd really rather use the NEOS one because the licenses for NEOS are free from Intel and it integrates much better. Or at least I know how it integrates, let me put it that way. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I do want to take a look at it.
Yeah, and he's very busy right now. He has a proprietary project that he's working on that is related to some of the ham projects he's done in the past.
Yeah, okay, so that's probably in the later part of the session, right? Because I remember he said he, about like me, he said, oh, I wish I had time to work on it and go play around with it, but he's busy with something else. But of course, once we get the hardware done, that's going to be the thing we're going to be playing around with, so we better have time.
Yeah, his other project, he's putting in about 70 or 80 hours a week, and it's a startup kind of thing.
Yeah, so he doesn't have much choice in what to do, and that's kind of what my problem is like I'm doing paying work for this for work, and it's like there's only so many hours, and the paying work has to go first. But now I got some time off, and I got to power through this to see if we can get at least the better part of it done.
Well, good deal. And so I did report basically that Dave is making progress and should have something in the relatively near future.
Okay, sounds good. I'm looking forward to maybe building 20 of them for him and shipping them off to whoever he and Heyoman figure out needs them.
That sounds like a pretty good report there.
Yeah, Dave was pretty excited, although he's, he's got his family coming and he has a holiday with his family and then a holiday with his wife's family, and then his wife has a birthday the day after Christmas, so it's a busy week for him.
Oh, that does sound very busy.
But I usually have, we have a couple hour coffee break once a week, and that we kind of catch up on each other is doing.
So you two live close to each other?
Yeah, the same town, maybe 2 or 3 miles apart.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like when Dan lived here. You know, we lived a little further apart than that. But once he moved down from Payson, we were maybe 8 miles apart. So we could get together once a week and have dinner and compare notes and things like that. So, yeah, that's good.
Well, Mike and I were discussing, I wasn't sure what part of North Carolina Dan lives in now. Is he out by the coast or up by the mountains?
He's in Northwest Raleigh.
Oh, okay, NC State.
Yep, just a little bit northwest of downtown, I think, is where he said he's at. So kind of a nice area.
Yes, that's the part of North Carolina I've been to quite a bit. So there's a lot of other parts that I've never been to.
Well, so Tom, how far along do you think we are as far as the RF board? You want to start talking to layout guys? Or I know I need to do a little bit more detailed look at it, but I think... The last revision you sent got pretty much all of our changes in, right?
Yeah, I don't know of any more changes. You need to look it over to make sure that there's not something seriously wrong in terms of hooking it up to the data engine. But other than that, I think we're ready to start.
Okay. Did you say you made like a little user's guide describing what all the jumpers do?
Yes, it's on the tangerinesdr.com website. It's called Application Notes.
Okay, great. I want to look at that too, because that will be cool getting that all set up and ready to go. We can even actually do the RF board ahead of the DE.
Yeah, if you trust that I didn't do something that makes the DE impossible.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point, that holding off a week or two maybe is the better part of discretion. So if we find out, like, oops, we did an impossible thing, then we can fix both of them.
Yeah, the application notes is added into the part numbers for the receiver, and so you may want to consider adding app notes to the other modules as well.
Okay, yeah, that's a good idea, since we will undoubtedly have them. And it's actually kind of the description of the jumpers and connectors is part of the ICD, but actually how you use them is really kind of beyond the scope of the ICD.
Yeah, it's there if you find value in the document. Good. If we just need to merge it with the ICD, we can do that. Doesn't matter.
Well, or maybe it'll be the beginning of the user manual for that board.
Well, that's true. It could collect all the app notes together, and then that would help folks try to figure out how to make it all play.
Yeah, I was trying to think. Somebody was talking to me this past week about an application for Tangerine SDR, and I don't remember what they said, but it seemed like what they were asking. They were requesting a particular kind of functionality. I think we talked about that last week. That was about the SSR, not the scientific SDR, but the, help me out here, Nathaniel, the one that Dave's working on. It's called the SSR, right?
The standard stations receiver.
That's it. Okay. Having brain fade here. But, you know, it's possible we could cheapen up the DE by removing features that they don't want enough that it may be usable by them as a back end for an RF module that they make that would have all of their mixers and stuff on it.
Yeah. How low of a price did you estimate that down to be?
I estimated around $100 for everything stripped off.
Okay. And then in addition to that, that's just for the data engine, or that includes the RF board also?
No, that would be just for the data engine. So then they'd have to put their mixers and an ADC. But it seems to me if they put one fancy ADC on there, they could switch the mixers between. I don't know what kind of performance they need there. And I have no idea what their price point is, whether, you know, $100, $150 for the whole thing is doable, or if that's way too high.
I think that's way too high for that. I think we're really trying to get down, you know, under $100, maybe closer to like, yeah, I would say under $100.
Yeah, and I just, with an FPGA, I just don't see how they're going to do that, because even the cheap FPGA engines that aren't customized at all, with no, and of course that's without a GPSDO, which it seems like they're going to need. So they probably won't need the precision that we have. I mean, I don't know what your opinion is on what kind of timestamping they're going to need relative to us, but if it's similar to us, then wow, I don't know how they're going to do it that cheap.
Yeah, I don't think they need the time stamping as, you know, quite to the same level you do, but they do need, you know, I think they will need a good stable oscillator to get to fractions of a hertz.
Yeah, so they need to measure the frequency, but of course the time information is, they can decode that actually. I mean, that's like they're going to look at the top of the hour or the top of the minute or something like that, and they're going to compare the carrier at a particular time.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe every minute they're going to look at the Doppler shift?
I think more often than that, actually.
Okay, well, anything we can do. But I'm interested to know if they come up with a way to do FPGAs cheaper, let's talk, because we all want to do it cheaper.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised that they were thinking about going down that route, because I thought that was going to be too expensive. But yes, we'll see.
But if they were to pick like a Red Pattaya or let's see, the Lime Mini, I think, has an FPGA, a smaller FPGA on it. They might get away with that, but I think a Lime Mini is like $150 and a Red Pattaya is $300 plus.
Yeah, so that's going to be too much money.
Yeah, so I guess the lines blur between the SSDR and the SSR when you start getting up into the $200 to $300 range.
Yeah, and we want to avoid that because the whole point of having a low-cost system is so that we can really make it very affordable to a lot of people.
I think if he could figure out a way to mix the carriers together and then distinguish them in DSP software inside the Raspberry Pi, that would be a mean feat.
Yeah, and I thought that's what they were originally planning on doing. I thought they were all mixing them down into an audio band that could then be, they could separate out in the DSP afterward, just like you're describing.
Yeah, because it seems like even if they're going to have 8 sound card inputs, there you go again. Now the cost is too high, so it's kind of like you have to be able to do this all in parallel somehow.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. I'll still be talking to him next year and see how things go. And, just watch to see what he comes up with, because that's kind of what it's all about, right? Coming up with a novel solution.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Scotty, are there any low-cost Raspberry Pi hats that have FPGAs on them?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think the answer is yes. But they're very, I think I remember seeing a Lattice FPGA. I can't remember if it's supposed to be a standalone or whether it's supposed to be a hat for a Pi. But the ORI guys were going to have an FPGA workshop, and they're going to use this particular FPGA. It's kind of like a basic sample that's got an FPGA on it instead. So it's a module with headers on the side. So if one of those headers is set up for a Pi, you could plug it right on.
Yeah, there's this thing called Raspberry Pi Ice 40, which has got a Lattice FPGA on it.
That sounds like it.
Okay, I haven't found the pricing on it, but it looks like a real low cost way to put a FPGA on a Pi.
Scotty, I wanted to mention that the thing that Phil was talking about was an FPGA that was in a format for Arduino, and it mimicked a high-end Arduino, and he liked it. Phil, that's Harmon, liked it because he could add functionality to an Arduino beyond by reprogramming the FPGA.
So it's basically an Arduino soft core processor then?
Yes.
Which would be like what was the company that Microchip just bought?
There's one. Is it SBN or SBO, something like that?
No, I'm thinking of it's a processor company that Microchip just bought, and they've incorporated all their processors into their line now. And I forget, I'm having another brain fade. I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's pretty common processor, and isn't that what's on the Arduino? It's not a Microchip part.
Right, I think so. What I was going to tell you about, the one that Phil was talking about, is called Pulse Rain. It's a Chinese guy. He did a crowdfunded build, but is no longer available. But all of his schematics and stuff are online, as well as his software. So again, you got to build the hardware, but big pieces of it are available, and Phil bragged about their documentation.
I just remember it's Atmel is what I'm thinking of. So that's what Arduino uses, if I remember right.
Yes, it is.
So basically he could put an Atmel processor into an FPGA, to the Lattice part, not the Lattice part, but into an FPGA. And then you can tweak on it and add features to the processor?
Yes. So Phil's suggestion was, if you can find a way that people don't have to write Verilog, but you still have the flexibility of the FPGA, and some people could write Verilog, but then you didn't have to wait on the one person that's writing that code.
Still at war with Verilog, is he?
Yeah. But I don't know. It's one of those things. You're either going to have to train up a bunch of people. I still have all of Kurt's Verilog lessons online on the OpenHPSDR if we want to resurrect those.
Yeah, maybe we do. I'm going to talk to the folks running the FPGA class at ORI and see how they're progressing and see whether they want any help. I don't really have the time to go in and help as an instructor, but I'd sure like to see a whole graduating class of FPGA guys who are willing to work on stuff.
Yeah, that would be great if you could get people. These are real world problems, and we can explain exactly what we want done. So at least we have some experience to tell them this works, this doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, who knows, maybe that Atmel processor would be a better one than the Neos. Although the thing is that there are a bunch of different flavors of Neos embedded processor, depending on how much horsepower you really need. So that's, and it's been around a long time. So it's, and it's highly integrated into the fabric of the FPGA and all of their IP and all that. So it's going to be, it's going to have some features that we really need before it's going to really compete, I think.
Yep, I have one of those ones that Anna was working on, and I started to try it, but I didn't ever make much progress.
Yeah, that was a socket board, right?
Yes.
So do you have a socket board?
Yes, I do.
Well, do you have the adapter board that allows your two, the HF2 and TX2 to hook up from your IQ2 to hook up to the socket board?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and did you ever get your receiver working again, or is it still DOA?
No, it. I haven't got the receiver working. I have an HF1, and I don't know. I have that, and then I have the HF2. I'm pretty sure it's the power supply that went bad.
What, you mean the onboard power supply?
Yeah, the onboard one.
Okay, well, maybe I can get that back from you and fix that and send it back to you, get you up and running again.
Okay, well, we'll make arrangements over the email, so.
Maybe the easiest thing is just to send you a new one.
Well, I ought to return this one so you can figure out what happened.
Yeah, yeah, especially, you can tell if the power supply is bad because it runs warm. And if it's not running warm, then that's probably it. And also, you said you didn't get the heartbeat LED, right?
Right, and what it was doing, it was running fine, and then I heard a whistle that went... And it was a declining pitch till it didn't work anymore. That was in the earphones.
Oh, that's the sounds like a bomb exploding.
Yeah, but it worked like a gem. And you know, I play with a lot of, you know, I have one of the Red Pitayas. I have that. I have Hermes. I have two Atlas sets. So I have lots of those kinds of toys. And then this weekend, I've been playing with one of the Nanos, NVIDIA Nanos, to see how well does it run Lin HPSDR, and it runs it at much higher speeds than the Odroid N2 before you get the pops and clicks.
Oh, really? That's interesting. But this is, which version of the Nano is this? This is the $100 one?
The $100 one.
Wow, okay, that's pretty cool.
And, well... I can run it at the rates you were wanting to run, no problem. And if you got up to the really high ones that John allows, it's not that good. But when I put that on my regular computer with an NVIDIA board that has a lot of CUDA cores in it, I can run it up to the 1500 fine. So it's just got to do with how many CUDA cores you have available.
And what software are you running for SDR?
John Melton's Lin HPSDR.
Oh, okay. Well, does that run take advantage of CUDA cores?
The way I think it works, John's code doesn't directly, but I think the version of FFTW he has somehow takes advantage of some of that. Or maybe it's, I don't know if it's that or if it's Warren's. Warren didn't write any CUDA stuff, so John was the one who did all the CUDA stuff on OpenHBSDR. So I don't know if the FFT uses CUDA cores, which would make sense.
Well, so does John's code use DTTSP or does it use Warren's DSP library?
It use everything in HPSDR now uses Warren Pratt's code.
Right, but the LinHPSDR is not, that's John Melton's code, right?
Yes, but he took Warren Pratt's, so Warren wrote it in a Microsoft C or C++. And John Melton took it and ported it both to Apple, and he also ported it to Linux. So he took care of the, and it'll actually run on a Raspberry Pi as well.
Okay, so John Melton uses WDSP then from Warren, his porting of it.
Yeah, all this is on John's GitHub site.
Well, very good. I'm still kind of wondering how it takes advantage of CUDA cores, but sounds like it does.
Well, you know, that's a reasonably good processor. And the one bad thing about the Nano is you have to put an external sound card on it.
Oh, okay. So, but you could feed the audio back to the Hermes board, right?
Yeah, you could. Well, actually, you can read the audio just from the Hermes board. And, or if you wanted to remote it, you have to, it has four USB 3 something. I'm not sure which level, probably zero.
Okay, so you just use a USB sound card then if you want to put the sound on the processor board?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I could do it either way. Just, and it does work fine and it doesn't seem to pull it down at all. So it's a little more robust. If somebody wanted to upgrade from the Odroid, the Nano is looking like a reasonable one. And there's Dave Witten tells me there are rumored upgrades in the NVIDIA world in the next year.
Okay, good. Any rumors is whether they're going to raise the price any? Because it seems to be an amazingly low price.
Well, one of the things they did is they took the Xavier. Do you know what that's their high-end one, and it was about $1,000. And then they basically cranked back on the memory and the throughput, and so there's three versions of the Xavier, and so the full price one is $1,000 or $1,200, and they have a $600 one and a $300 one.
Okay, but none of those are, they're still all supersets of the $100 one, right?
They actually changed the architecture a little bit between the two. So the Nano is kind of for experimenters who just want to try this stuff, and the others are really solid. And they're quite a bit of an improvement over the old Jetson TX1, which I have one of those too.
Yeah, and the three boards you mentioned, the $300, $600, and $1,200 one, those are plug-in boards, right? They're meant to go into some kind of base assembly?
Yeah, that's with the base assembly. Now, Dave Witten was interested in could he build an alternative base assembly?
Yeah, and combine the, in other words, put a module socket on the data engine so we can plug the processor right in.
Yes, something like that. And then if we can find a few CUDA programmers, we could really take advantage of that software. I've known several people at the university are using these in image processing problems.
We can certainly do that. Is that for those three boards, is the connector a common point? Or is it fewer number of pins on the small, on the cheap board and more pins on the expensive board? Or how does that work? Could we put a connector on that would accept any of the three boards?
The three high-end boards are one, a superset, and Nano has a subset pin connector. But they're trying to standardize on it, and it's kind of like they're testing the market with various levels and see what flies.
Okay, because the way I'm doing the schematic here, it's set up modularly too, so that basically all the peripherals are drawn up with their own bypassing and associated circuitry and everything, and they're I won't say they're modules, but logically they're modules. So the idea would be when we get ready to put a Cyclone 5E part on here, like a CVA-9 that level part, or some other FPGA, it would be easy to do that and then just include the modules that you want to include. So it would seem like if we were to say drop off one of the RF modules and put a processor socket in place of it, we could have a variant that could take one of those I'd probably go with the upper three modules, and or I don't know. I mean, it depends on the use cases that we can identify, right?
Yes, it is. And at least with the one I have, it's the connector socket is 200 or 300 pins in about a 2 or 2.5 inch socket.
So it's kind of like a DRAM socket.
Yeah, and the thing, because of the CUDA, is any pin can be programmed to do anything, just like an FPGA.
Dave must have heard us talking about him.
Dave!
I hate
you're here, and we're talking about NVIDIA boards and FPGAs and all kinds of things. So I know you know a little bit more about the different NVIDIA boards, but I was trying to tell Scotty that the one I set up, the Nano, runs John Melton's code with no pops up to, except for the highest FFT size that he allows.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm not entirely surprised. Both the ARMs and of course the NVIDIA cores can work pretty fast on that. And those ARMs are a little faster than most of these others, I think.
Scotty asked a question about what is the socket coming out of the NVIDIA connector, and I was thinking there are two, one on the Nano and one on the higher priced ones.
At first they were using this fancy thing that for the TX1s and TX2s that's fairly expensive, and the Xaviers use the same one, but they don't even follow the same pin out on it, so it's they're not interchangeable there. But the Nano has I don't know, is it 400 pin? It's like a memory card connector. It's very well described. There's an extensive document explaining it, but it's just an edge connector, like a SIM, you know, memory card.
So that's edge fingers.
Okay, but did you say the Xavier ones are not compatible with each other? They're different ones for the different level cards?
Yeah, though I'm not sure. Did they come out with an Xavier on a card edge one? I'm not sure. I'll have to look. I can look pretty quick and tell you. They've come out with some new one. They keep coming out with different variants of it.
So Dave has one of the original Xaviers, which was their first iteration. Now they're coming down in price in the Xavier line, and they're making changes based on the market. And I think they're going to have multiple price points for different levels of Xaviers.
That's more or less right, yeah.
Well, anyway, it may be an alternative, a future alternative, when we get this data engine done, of putting a bigger FPGA on or maybe substituting a processor slot in place of one of the RF modules, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's lots you could do that would be interesting using the, just feeding it with with USB 3 or gig ether. It has those capabilities, but the real feed is it has a they have a, they I think NVIDIA has about as bleeding edge PCIe stuff on their things. I suspect they're one of the drivers of that that technology, and so they have the really fast transfer rates on some of those.
Yeah, and that would be the thing is if you're plugging this on, you're plugging an FPGA board, like we originally started, the question was, are there any hats for Raspberry Pi that have FPGAs on them? And there are a lot. But if you even if you plug a big FPGA onto that connector, you're still kind of limited by the speed of the I/O on that connector compared to the speed of the channels, I'm sure, that are on the Xavier. And I haven't looked at that architecture in a while, but Dave Witten, are the PHYs for USB 3 and Gig E on the plug-in module, or do you have to put them on the base module?
I believe the PHY. I believe they may be incorporated in the module itself, and that all you need is, because I was trying to design a board around this, and I realized I was kind of duplicating some things. I believe the USB 3 and the Gig Ether and the PCIe, and it can use all of those on the Jetson one, on the Nano. I believe they are all, the PHYs are there. There's not much of a PHY for PCIe, but that I believe that's right. But I don't hold me to that.
Okay, I'm just wondering what kind of duplication we're going to have if we try to put one of these on a data engine, because we may end up with, most of the stuff that's on the DE is actually on the NVIDIA board already. So you really just want kind of a baseboard with connectors.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was trying to make through that through the Geppetto, Gumsticks is Geppetto thing. And they finally kind of got all the parts there, including the mini PCIe, which they did, I think, because I requested it. Or you can use M.2.
I'm on the NVIDIA page. It looks like they have an RGMII interface implying that the PHY would actually be on the baseboard.
I could be wrong. It also could depend on which exact one you're looking at.
Well, I'm looking at the AGX Xavier 8 gig versus the Jetson AGX Xavier. So I guess that's only just different in memory size. And, I just jumped right in here, so I have no idea if I'm on the latest ones or not.
Well, the one they usually refer to is as the Jetson one is the Nano. That's the most commonly used. The Xavier is the high end, the Nano is the low end. And the supporting, the whole architecture is really pretty different between them. And so the AGX, the high-end one, will do the developer kit setup thing. Will do, it has 16-bit PCIe and, at 4.1, something like that. And it has all kinds of stuff. But they may have put some of that stuff on the board. But they have different setups for the supporting ARM chips too. I don't know. I haven't looked at it lately.
Okay, because on the NVIDIA site, and it calls it Jetson AGX, but this is a high-end one. They have a 384-core GPU and a 512-core Volta GPU. They're both Volta GPUs, but one's bigger than the other. So let's see, two NVDLA engines, 6-core ARM 8.2, doesn't say what version it is. Anyway, I'll poke around here. I'm just kind of curious. It's a 600 and something pin 600 pin connector for the edge connector.
That would be probably the Xavier one, I imagine.
Yeah, these are both Xavier, and it's a 699-pin connector. And they're 100 millimeter by 87 millimeter board size. So just those are the two I landed on to compare.
Yeah, well, those are some of the variations of Xavier, and that's the high end. But then there's the Nanos, and then there's a TX1 and TX2 are both out there. I don't know why anybody'd use a TX1 right now, but the TX2s are still popular for a lot of stuff. But probably overkill for our purposes. One thing about the Xavier is, I'm not sure it isn't more GPU processing than, well, I never say never, but more than I would know what to do with radio. I guess it's, you know, if somebody really wants to go all out, but it seemed almost overkill. But I bought one, so just to find out.
Yeah, it's expensive, and yeah, I kind of get that, but perhaps we need to get something working on the smaller boards before we go out and say, wow, I need more horsepower, or we may over-design something.
Yeah, I've always thought back to Phil fooling with the FPGA and their front end radio, you know, A to D front end, and they piped it into the original Jetson TK1, which is all in all probably at best comparable to the Nano, but that was able to handle six receivers simultaneously. At least what they showed at Friedrichshafen 2.5 years ago. Now it wasn't doing any transmitting, but it seemed like even for that kind of application, even the oldest one had more than, you know, a lot of horsepower, and I think they've smoothed some of the edges since then too.
Say, Dave, I want to change subjects. I gave a quick report about your magnetometers. I didn't know if you had anything you wanted to bring in.
Yes, I want to apologize for being so very late. I'm glad I caught the tail end of this. My wife and I got caught up in watching Chernobyl up there and kind of forgot. And she lived not too far from there when that was all occurring, so it has some impact to her. I've got two kinds of boards. I don't know what you told them exactly, Dave, but I've got a whole bunch of different prototype boards back, and gotten around some of my mistakes. I made a simpler one that doesn't have the I2C extender on it, because that's the hardest thing to solder, and I could make the board much smaller without it for testing. And I thought some people might want to use something other than an extended I2C as a remote thing. On and on. I won't go into all my reasoning. You're disconnected from your channel. But it was. But it does seem to. They do seem to be working mostly. And I'm able to read both the temp sensor and the magnetometer, and, you know, trying to put it into some shape. I don't know that I had the pull-ups on the address lines quite right on the last batch, but so I made some changes to that, but we'll see.
So have you tried anything using the extenders, the line extenders yet?
No, I haven't tested them properly, because many of my mistakes were around that. And now I have boards that should work But that thing's such a bugger. It's just that one chip. Even the temperature chip is not a problem, but that one chip is really hard to solder, and there's no bigger version of it that I've found. But I'll do it. I thought I'd have a lot of time, but as usual, things grab time away. But I'll try to get that tested.
Okay, yeah, and if you need any help soldering, feel free to just to drop some boards and parts in the mail, and I'm back to you by return mail, and our guys can solder them up for you if that's holding you up at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you guys can do it, I'm more than happy to have them do it. I don't expect I'm anywhere near the best, but I've done a lot of this real fine pitch stuff, but those ones are buggers. You know, that's all I can say. I'll try anything.
Yeah, I know my nemesis is the 0.5 millimeter FPC connectors. Those are just really hard.
I think that's about what these are. They're very similar to that. And also, yeah, the device itself gets to be so small, it's very difficult to, you know, keep it in the right place while you're trying to apply some heat to it. I really think it's going to have to be soldered a different way.
Yeah, like maybe with hot air or something. But anyway, we do pretty well with small parts like that. So if you need some help, let us know. We're willing to help.
I will mention we're at our time.
Yep, we are. So anything else from anyone?
I may send off a schematic again to somebody to see if a few of my puzzlements can be cleared up. But I think I've got them right, but I wouldn't mind having somebody else's opinion. So, but other than that, I have nothing to say. I'm sorry for being late.
Oh, no problem. And if you feel free to send it off to me this week, because I'm going to be working all week on this stuff. So I got some free time, and I keep away from real work and do real work at home and have some fun and make some real progress here.
Well, I'll probably send you a the HF2 board and see what you think of it.
Okay, sounds good. And one more thing, a parting thing here. They've put our forums up on Hamcation. They really did what they said they were going to do. They got an extra forum room, and so we have forums on Friday and Saturday. So it's going to be fun for all in February if anybody can make it. I know Bill's planning to come. Nathaniel, have you figured it out yet?
I'm leaning toward it. I still need to get the tickets to be absolutely sure, but I think it's very likely.
Okay, so take a look at hamcation.com under the forums, and there's five forums a day, and we're in forum rooms two, the last three forums on Friday and the last three forums on Saturday. So we have six forums. Friday ones are about space stuff, and the Saturday ones are about PSWS and digital TV.
Great. Yeah, if I can make it, it'll be Saturday.
Yep, and we put ours on Saturday. So hopefully if you can make it, then I assigned you and Bill, or actually I assigned Bill because I didn't know if you were going to come. So the idea would be Bill's going to do some software presentation, and I would do the introduction if you're not going to be there. But if you're going to be there, then you and Bill can split that time, because he doesn't think he has an hour to talk, maybe half of that time. And then I'll do an hour on the Tangerine on the hardware implementation. So we'll have basically 2 hours with a 15-minute break in between.
That sounds really good.